Good morning, everyone. I'm going to go ahead and call the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. Thank you very, very much for being here. This is our first day of having the committee together for the short session. What we're going to do is open up an organizational meeting to adopt the rules. But before we do that, I do want to take just a quick moment and just acknowledge that we do have a few new members here joining us. Senator Vince, as well as Senator Wagner, are new members. Gentlemen, thank you very much for volunteering and to be part of it. We're going to get back to y'all. I'm just going to give you a heads up that we're going to ask you for rank, serial number, and all that. So before we get to that, let's go ahead and take a motion on opening up the organizational meeting and for the adoption of the committee rules.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 6, 2018.
Senator Thatcher moves to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 6, 2018. Before we open this up for discussion, Whitney, can you just give us an overview? What, if any, changes we have in these rules?
Thank you, Chair Prezonsky, members of the committee. These are the standard uniform committee rules, and there are no real changes from last year, just an hour notice before a work session can be done on amendments and the standard rules from last session.
All right, thank you. Is there any other discussion? Is there any objection to the motion? Not seeing any, so ordered. And now we're official. We'll close the organizational meeting. And at this point, before we start our public hearing and on Senate Bill 1531, I do want to go ahead and give our new members an opportunity to introduce themselves. And what I'll just do is start on the end and work back. So, Rob, Senator Wagner, if
sure.
you'd be so kind.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to participate as a part of the august Senate Judiciary Committee, Mr. Chair. Just as a little bit of context, I have now 5 days as a state senator, so feel like learning my way into the role. Obviously, it's been an honor to have the opportunity to replace Senator Devlin's long tenured service. The district itself, for folks that may not know, is Lake Oswego, Westland, Tualatin, River Grove, Durham, and a large portion of Southwest Portland. So it's actually the only suburban district that represents all of Multnomah, or portions of Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington County, which means I have 3 sheriffs and 15 county commissioners, as well as all the cities. So I'm sure I'll have an opportunity to get to know our law enforcement and local government professionals that tie in here. Look forward to learning my way into the issues, and it'll be a fun short session. So thank you for the opportunity to be a part of this committee.
Again, thank you for volunteering.
Of course.
Senator Vance.
At the end of the session, we'll come back and ask him about the fun part.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, for this opportunity. I know most of you here. I've successfully avoided judiciary for 10 years. Actually, I'm very happy, and notwithstanding the rather liberal use of the term volunteer, I'm very happy to be on this committee. I'm from Ontario. My new Senate district includes Baker, Grant, Harney, Jefferson, Malheur, Wheeler, and parts of Clackamas, Deschutes, Lake, Marion, and Wasco counties. In my law practice of 30, I've been a lawyer for 40 years, but I started in Ontario as a general practitioner. I did about 7 years of mostly criminal, a little criminal, mostly divorce work, and then went into banking work representing 7 or 8 banks in the great foreclosure crisis of the early 80s, and then went into insurance defense work, workers' comp work, and then went into more transactional work, went on the Water Resource Commission for 8 years, went into water law and water litigation, and then did a bunch of utility work, and then ultimately spent the last 10 years or so working just in moving family ranches and farms from generation to generation and involved mostly as a mediator. Then 10 years ago, joined the House and spent most of my time just working on legislative matters. So anyway, I have a wonderful background in the law. I think the law is great. I when people say they're glad they're not a lawyer, I usually say we are too. But I'm happy to be a lawyer, and I'm happy to have joined this committee. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Benson. Thank you again for, one, not maybe volunteering, but being drafted to this position. I know that, you, as you stated, that you had purposely not wanted to serve in on the Judiciary Committee in the House, I think maybe to give you an opportunity to have some other experiences besides that perspective that you have. But I'm very pleased that you're here and value that your engagement because of your expertise in working in the law to help bring us some balance to us and assurances that we're looking at doing what's best for the state. So, gentlemen, thank you again. Any other opening comments for any other members before we get to work? All right, with that, we're going to go ahead and open up our public hearing on Senate Bill 1531. And Whitney, if you can give us an overview.
Yes, thank you, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. This is Senate Bill 1531 and was brought to us by Senator Frederick and Senator Manning. It requires law enforcement officers to meet with a mental health professional once every 2 years with the employing law enforcement agency responsible for those costs. There are currently no amendments.
All right, thank you. Before we take testimony, one thing I forgot to do, I just wanted to acknowledge our staff that is here. Christy, Mike, and Jess, thank you very much. Jess is new. I understand we won't get to see her too often on the Senate side. She's going to be pulling the weight on the House side, but thank you for being part of the team. All right, gentlemen, however you'd like to present.
Thank you. I'll start off, and then we'll have Senator Manning, and then Kevin Modica, Chief. Well, Chair Przanski, members of the committee, thank you for inviting me. I'm Senator Lou Frederick from District Oregon State Senate District 22, that's North and Northeast Portland. This bill, Senate Bill 1531, is really a simple bill. It connects to much larger issues, however. It's a step, a small step, but a significant step in the right direction, I believe. It's also relatively easy to explain. I believe the state of Oregon should have every law enforcement officer in the state visit and simply talk with a mental health professional at least once every 2 years. This is not to be an evaluation or a fit for service discussion, simply a talk. It will not be recorded or parked or reported out. This is a check-in. Why? Well, first of all, the stress on law enforcement is obvious to everyone. Beyond the lack of enough officers for our ever-increasing population in Oregon, the simple truth is that they often see people on their worst day. They see some of the most horrific episodes in our society. They witness traumas every day that would bring tears to the eyes of everyone here. And they are trained to approach these events with an objective, dispassionate eye and heart. But despite that objectivity, that distance, they are human, thank God. They are affected by those incidents. They find ways to cope. Those who are self-aware enough find support systems to help them work through those experiences. Police agencies across the state and across the country try to provide supervisors and others who can identify and intervene when necessary. But they are human as well. They miss signals. They are not trained to pick out the right times to be there. They often may not know. And importantly, they are not mind readers. I'm not asking for mind readers here or perfection. I suggest a simple, potentially preventative action that ensures that everyone in law enforcement talk with someone once every 2 years. I think it would help bring down the level of anxiety triggers often associated with trauma. Perhaps it would help officers identify where their concerns might be on the job or elsewhere. That would include anxiety related to family and other experiences. A friend, a retired officer, discovered that a certain color blue made him anxious. Whenever he saw that color, his adrenaline level went up and a fear response was triggered, whether the situation warranted it or not. It took him a while. He was self-aware enough to talk with someone. He traced that to the color of a T-shirt of a little boy who died in his arms in a car accident. Right now, as I understand it, after talking to several police groups, identifying a stress response can mean both a cultural response by colleagues within the law enforcement community, shunning or worrying about support, and a real threat to a career. We do not, right now, have the resources we need to address those issues when they are found. But I believe this bill creates an awareness of the issues. Let me get to the other issues that this bill provides a window to. We do not have a uniform standard of psychological screening for law enforcement in Oregon. Let me make that clear again. We do not have a uniform standard of psychological screening for law enforcement in Oregon. This was also a surprise to me. But some agencies do not screen applicants for their psychological fitness to protect and serve. That is a concern. Perhaps bringing this bill forward also spreads light on the mental health entry point for our police officers. As I understand it, we do not have a uniform set of requirements that once on the force, officers have to maintain physical health and conditioning. That too surprised me. There are exceptions when it comes to certain specialty teams or departments. I believe this bill also speaks simply to the issue of stigma regarding mental health. Many of you know that because of several people in my family, I am particularly sensitive to the stigma associated with mental health issues. I believe that we have not given this issue serious thought and have relied on an outdated approach that traps us in a punitive pattern, costing us limited family opportunities, loss of talent, and lots of money spent on prison cells instead of effective treatment. Under Senate Bill 1531, requiring all law enforcement to spend at least 45 minutes to 1 hour every 2 years with a mental health professional, no one's left out that way. No one is stigmatized for somehow being unbalanced and needing help. No report is issued except a note that a chat took place. Everyone does it. We already have a psychological visit following an excessive use of force incident, so there's already a link between both the requirement and a psychological visit. But the bill is only an attempt to bring a small step to the support for police and by immediate proxy to our communities. The thought process goes like this. If police know that we are concerned about them, if we know that they're getting help when needed, at least a tiny bit of support, we all feel a little better about encounters in difficult times, often with high anxiety on all sides. Now, will this cost money? Yes. But I believe several paths indicate that it may not cost additional money. I also think a case can be made that it would save money, avoiding the small number but increasingly costly lawsuits and settlements associated with anxiety-triggered incidents and other traumas in departments, cities, and county bureaus. I'll just mention last summer's emergency room incident in Utah as an example of something triggering an out-of-place response and a lawsuit that will likely cost a lot of money. One source for paying for this could be already in place in those employee assistance programs that are around. It means that there are already mental health professionals associated with various bureaus and benefit contracts. Another source, I've been told, involves officer wellness programs and the grants available at the national and state levels. I understand we may already have some programs in place that would help smaller groups across access mental health professionals once every 2 years. Now, a single meeting will not solve any stress-related issue. It could allow a professional to help the officer navigate to more intense therapy if needed. It only provides a non-threatening, non-stigmatizing, easily accessible opening for a conversation. And let me end by repeating the simple nature of this bill, as I see it. Simple idea is trust. I hope this is seen as an example of trust that we as a state want to see the people who protect and serve our community safe and healthy, especially mentally healthy. And it may generate a renewed trust in the general public that we are taking care of our professionals in a way that to bring down the anxiety of everyone in the state when we struggle with difficult situations. This will not solve all of our problems. I hope that it will take a step towards greater confidence on all sides. I hope you'll consider Senate Bill 1531. Obviously, I hope you'll pass it during the 2018 session. You will now hear from several people supporting the bill and probably likely some disagreeing with the bill. That's fine. Know this. While the default for some in our culture is to frame everything as an adversarial relationship, that is not my approach. While some reach for perfection in every legislative encounter, I'm more willing to work with people to create a climate of trust and support. This should be an opening to understand and act on the mental health for some of the most critical public employees we have. Thank you. I'm going to have Senator Manning speak next, and then former Assistant Chief Modica, Kevin Modica, speak after that. And after their statements, I have a couple more lines, words I want to say. Thank you. Senator Manning.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Fredericks. My name is James Ivory Manning, Jr. I am the senator from District 7, which is Northwest Eugene, up to Junction City and all that marvelous farming agricultural community in between. I'm here today in support of SB 1531. Before I begin, I'd like to just share a few of my personal experiences. I am a former Missouri State Penitentiary Corrections Officer. I worked at a level 5 maximum security prison. I seen things and while I was working there, that most people can only imagine and you see in movies. I saw two inmates, actually one inmate, rip another one and his guts spill out on the floor. I saw several incidents of that. When I got my dream job as a police officer, one of the things I wanted to do is to help people. That was my sole mission. And I remember a couple of incidents that happened, a couple of murders that I revisit today in my sleep. One was an older gentleman, and they were around with some family members, and one of the gentlemen that was a former, was married to his granddaughter, but now they were divorced, shot him. I was one of the first officers on the scene. I remember going through the door, and this elderly gentleman laying on the floor holding the leg of the sofa that was closest to him. And I remember I could still hear the sounds. And I looked, and there was a hole in his chest. And there was nothing I can do about it. But I still remember hearing him. There was another incident when I was on the police department. You got a call, domestic violence. It's always a big thing. Most officers find themselves really engaged and hurt often in domestic violence because sometimes one of the other spouses may figure that you're hurting my spouse, and next thing you know, there's a pan going upside the head of the officer or whatever. A lot of things can go wrong. This particular one was lasting over years. At one point, the husband attempted to burn a house down with all of the family members on the inside. I tried to get her to press charges against him, but she refused. We got several other calls. One time I got a call, and as I approached the scene, arrived on scene, I saw a woman laying in the street and a guy standing over her with a shotgun. He ignored my commands to drop the rifle or the gun, and he just proceeded to walk away into the house. My first instinct was to provide some help to the victim. By that time, other units had came on scene, and they had already secured the house and eventually apprehended the perpetrator. Not long after that, about a month, the same people, the husband shot her 9 times at a bar. 9 times, and she didn't make it. I wonder all the time, what else could I have done differently that may have helped or saved her life? I still see her face, like I see the face of the elderly gentleman with a bullet hole in his chest. Nobody offered me any assistance, said, do you want to talk about this? And those ghosts still are with me today. Police officers come in contact with maybe 10%, mostly 10% of the population. And of that 10%, most of them are under very strenuous conditions and some of the most violent conditions. We spend a lot of money to recruit and hire our officers. Senate Bill 1531 is not designed to put officers in a bad place or to draw them out. It is designed to offer a little help, someplace where they can go and they can have a conversation if they need to. Not all officers would need this, but it's always good to check in. I spent 24 years in the United States Army. It was mandatory that we do psychological evaluations. As a drill sergeant, I went through one of the toughest evaluations that you can ever have. And then we deal around with different weapons. Now remember this, when you go to the range, when police officers go to the range, you're going there to learn how to shoot. And in the military, we are taught to shoot center mass. There is no shooting to wing or to incapacitate a person. It's none of that. And those split-second decisions that you have to make, they went on in my mind. Even though during my time, I never shot anybody, thank God. But it was always there, that possibility. What would I do? Not everybody is able or capable, or nor should be a police officer. But for the ones that we have invested so much in our community, we need to make sure that they are given the appropriate time and the support that they need. I was a member, and I'll wrap this up. I was a member of the Eugene Police Commission for 6 years. I talked with the former chief and with the officers, Police Officers Association. I said to them at a table that we were having, I said that officers need to be able to go, if they had a bad day or experienced something bad in life, maybe a death, maybe they lost something of very value to you, they need to have some place where they can go and talk to someone without fear of any kind of repercussion. They did that in Eugene, and they said it's working very well. All I'm saying is that we need to make sure that we are protecting our investments, and it's not everybody's designed to be a police officer, nor should be. But the ones that we have out here, we need to make sure that they're comfortable and make sure that they're also supported. Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, I thank you so much for allowing me to talk and take this time, and for the members of the committee, thank you so much. This is a good bill, and I'm hoping, I sincerely hope that you will go ahead and move this bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Members of the committee, I want to introduce Kevin Modica. He is the retired Assistant Chief of Police for the Portland Police Bureau. He has been a professional, been in the career 37 years, 31 years in Portland Police. The list of awards that Chief Modica has is very long. but I want to highlight a couple of them. Three Distinguished Service Awards, several Unit Commendation Awards, the Martin Luther King Lifetime Achievement Award, the DPSST Instructor of the Year Award, and he has been on boards including NOBLE, which is the National Organization of Blacks in Law Enforcement, CASA, the Boy Scouts LifeWorks of Portland, the GREAT program, National Policy Board, Juvenile Justice Accountability Panel, Gang Impacted Family Advisory Committee, Gang Violence Task Force, and the Police Activities League. And to say that I'm proud of this is an understatement. He accepted the role as my legislative assistant for this legislative session, so you'll be seeing a lot of him. And I'm proud to get a chance to introduce him, and he has a few words as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Chair Przanski, members of the committee, I appreciate the time. As Senator Frederick said, I am Kevin Modica. I'm retired assistant chief from the city of Portland. The word retired has many meanings. It's only been a few months, so it's not like I've been asleep in the chair. I do desire to stay involved in public safety and working for the community. Prior to working for the citizens of Portland, I also worked for Clackamas County Sheriff's Office. So the years that the senator spoke of, it's actually 35 active in uniform, in addition to having the opportunity to be a fellow at IACP and sit on other boards. I wanted to say that I agree with the spirit of this proposed bill, 1531. And I'd like to take a moment to provide a perspective to that. There's been much said this morning, and I think it's important to talk about the difference between mental health fitness and mental health crisis. And so critical incident stress management is one of the things that is spoken about nationally and even locally. But every incident and every call is not a critical incident. However, mental health fitness is an important aspect to keep in mind, because over the course of time, there is a buildup many times of small stressors, things that just box you in as a public safety professional. You're there to do a job. You want to perform well for the citizens and for your command. But every now and then, there's a call that might not be critical in the eyes of anyone but you. And you have the same call,
maybe several times over a career. A baby that has expired. A victim that is repeatedly victimized. Another dead body. So historically, in the culture of public safety, there's been an expectation to toughen up. This is the job, son. This is the job, young woman. This is what we do. It's also interesting to note that our firefighters, our corrections officers, our probation and parole officers many times find the same small stressors. So it could be that call. It could be something that's going on at home. It could be administrative pressure. It could be changes in policy, changes in leadership, expectations that can't be met. It could be groupthink. While your union president may be encouraging en masse a disagreement with something that ultimately would be good for you and for your profession. I think it's important to say that the emphasis of this bill is on building and rebuilding trust and increasing officer wellness. This is directly a reflection of 21st century policing, specifically pillars 1 and 6. And if you have not seen that document, if you have the time to advise your staff to bring that forward to you, there's some very interesting and well thought out policy recommendations. It is known that the public safety professions have employees that will suffer vicarious trauma, as well, some PTSD, lots of anxiety, and other issues that are compounded by exposure to the environments of the job, as I said. The viewpoint of this bill might be seen in a different life if it pointed towards a resource directory, a beta test with particular departments, legislative support towards developing resources in the region. However, with that being said, we need a starting point and a foundation for getting that type of work done. This proposed bill would provide that foundation. It would provide development for funding and technical assistance. I want to quickly go to a couple of questions that I've been asked. What is the purpose? Why would you introduce a bill and make this law? What is the interest to the public? A very simple answer: wellness. Wellness. I can't think of any citizen who would not want their public safety officers, their firefighters, the corrections officers and staff, counselors, probation and parole officers, to not have a sense of wellness as they approach individuals that may be having their worst moment, or individuals that must change their behavior, their lifestyle, their activity at every moment. The individuals responding to those must have a sense of wellness, must have a resource somewhere, someone that is professional, that has the expertise, that knows the population, and can help provide a path to better wellness, to better fitness. As the senator said, currently there is not even a statute that requires law enforcement agencies to have a psychological review of potential hires. I believe this bill would help navigate that. Most larger agencies do that as a matter of professional practice, best practice, but many small agencies do not. I want to close with saying that I would ask for your support to consider the testimony and look at it as a foundation this bill being a foundation for what could be considered an early warning system, a component that is non-punitive and not to be considered for discipline, dismissal, or decertification, but rather for wellness. And finally, the systems that are currently in place, like employee assistance plans, those are fantastic, but they aren't always timely, particularly in a crisis moment. Peer support teams, very well thought of, but increased training is needed. Expanding these resources to make experienced, accepted, and vetted professionals available to provide the service that is referred to in this bill would be important. Just a small mention of numbers. And you can have your staff look this up or look this up yourself. In 2017, apparently there were 129 line of duty deaths. However, there have been some estimates of self-harm that are as high or higher. I hope that you consider what's been said. Obviously, as the senator said, I'm going to be here for the remainder of the session. If you have any questions or would like additional information, I'm available. Thank you for extending the time.
All right, thank you. Senator Frederick, I'm going to ask you to hold off on any closing comments because we have one more person who wants to speak in support and have five that need, I'm going to get as many on. I've been told that I need to stand by our time allotments.
No problem.
Where we usually take a few more extra minutes. I think I want to start off the first day on time.
Sounds good. Thank you. Yep.
Just the 129 line of duty deaths were
national.
Thank you.
All right. So, Kimberly, if you'd like to come up, and I'm going to give you just a couple of minutes because I have three that I need to get on, and then I have two that may have to come back.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Kimberly McCullough. I am the policy director at the ACLU of Oregon. I'm here today to speak in strong support of Senate Bill 1531. We very much support the overall goal of this bill, which is to increase the access to and utilization of mental health services by law enforcement. Law enforcement have, as you just heard, a lot of compelling testimony about some of the most stressful jobs in our society. Interacting with victims can cause an incredible amount of stress and vicarious trauma or compassion fatigue, as we often talk about. And interactions can also involve violence and very dangerous situations. And then, on top of all of that, we expect law enforcement to make snap decisions, often in situations where there's a life or death a choice that has to be made. And we entrust them with weapons that we often then put them in situations where they end up needing to use those weapons. So there are very unique circumstances that law enforcement face. And because of that, we need to make sure that we are providing them with the tools that they need to be successful and to help keep themselves and our communities safe. So this bill is really aimed at that. And I just want to reemphasize that it's about creating an entry point to mental health services and that it doesn't require any sort of specific treatment. If it required some sort of specific mental health treatment or medical treatment, I think we would run into some difficulties. But the fact that it's just a check-in and it's an opportunity for an officer and a mental health professional to do essentially what they frequently do, which is a sort of self-assessment. So it's a collaborative process between the counselor and the client where they determine collectively whether or not there's more services that are needed. And that is something that mental health counselors do all of the time for folks. So they don't require a specific diagnosis before they actually go in. And, you know, sometimes it's just because you want to talk about stressful things in your life. One of the biggest barriers to accessing mental health services is just getting in the door, picking up the phone and making the phone call and making the appointment and actually getting through the door. So we see this as a really great way to actually make that more regular. And as was mentioned earlier, one of the other big barriers is stigma. Ideally, we would live in a society where everybody went and got an annual or biannual mental health check-in, just like we go in and get physicals. And so we really see this as an opportunity to actually normalize that and to have law enforcement sort of set the example for the rest of society about how we can integrate mental health into our regular lives.
All right, Kimberly, so, I'm going to need to close you off. I got two people that came out from out of town, and they're not going to be able to get back.
Okay, can I say one more thing very quickly? I do understand that there are some concerns about this bill that may be raised that have to do with potentially adverse employment consequences for folks. And so I just want to say that we would be delighted to participate in any conversations about how to address that if it's necessary, because certainly this bill shouldn't have any sort of negative. I think that's not the intention of this bill, to have any sort of negative consequence for the actual officers. So if there are improvements that need to be made, we certainly would be supportive of that. So all right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to go ahead and call up Chief Ferraris and Undersheriff Clausen and Patrick Singh. You're going to be third if you get heard, because at this point, it looks like I'm going to ask Michael and Scott to come back. And then Patrick, if we have time for you today, we'll do that. If not, then we'll have the three of you come back. Gentlemen, I apologize for the shortness in time, but if you'd like to give us your testimony, we'd appreciate it.
Great. Thank you, Chair Przanski, Vice Chair Thatcher, and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Thank you for making time for us to visit today. My name is Jim Ferraris. I currently serve as a chief of police for the city of Woodburn. I'm here representing today the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police to share my perspective on Senate Bill 1531. I do appreciate each of you for your commitment to public safety. You hear everything that affects us in my world, and we certainly appreciate your partnership. This is my 40th year of service in Oregon as a police officer. I've served the communities of Beaverton as a police officer and detective, the city of Portland, working as an officer up through the rank of assistant chief for nearly 30 years, the city of Salem as a deputy police chief, and now the chief in the city of Woodburn. My perspective is based on dealing with just about every police issue one could imagine, from leadership and administration, as well as from an operational viewpoint dealing with violent crime, including homicide, domestic and child abuse, aberrant human behavior, officer-involved use of deadly force, and the like. I'm also a member of the Employee Mental Health Working Group of the International Association of Chiefs of Police. This working group is focused on officer safety and wellness. It includes an agency's response to the emotional and psychological well-being of law enforcement employees, to foster an environment where mental health is considered as important as physical health, and to identify employees who may need assistance. OACP opposes Senate Bill 1531. This bill, which I am certain is well-intended, is not good for law enforcement and not good for Oregon or its communities. It's a perceived solution to something that we have already underway and that we are addressing, and I'd like to talk for a moment why I believe this bill is not necessary. We already have a starting place and foundation for officer wellness in place. Do we really need this legislation? Many programs, protocols, and policies already in place for Oregon law enforcement officers. Oregon law enforcement leaders are constantly working to improve our hiring, employment, and wellness processes. What we want as leaders is what's best for our organizations, our employees, and our communities. Many law enforcement agencies use pre-employment psychological screening and testing to determine if a candidate is psychologically sound before making a decision to hire a police candidate. The Oregon Accreditation Alliance, which accredits a number of agencies in Oregon, has that as a best practice. Many law enforcement agencies already have protocols in place that allow for independent medical examinations and fitness for duty evaluations of police officers when necessary, should an agency have an employee experiencing behavior or mental health issues. Again, an accreditation best practice. Most municipalities and counties have employee assistance programs available through their employees' human resource departments. These EAPs generally provide for counseling for mental health-related issues. Additionally, law enforcement almost universally offer some sort of health insurance that often has a benefit for treatment of mental health or behavioral issues if sought by the officer. This bill is so broad, it mandates participation in meetings with a mental health professional by officers who may have no need, may object to participation, or who may not sufficiently disclose or be cooperative enough to benefit. As far as peer support is concerned, many law enforcement agencies in Oregon either have in place or have access to peer support networks where police officers specially trained in emotional trauma-related peer support act as a resource for officers who are experiencing issues related to the exposure to the stressors and trauma encountered on the job. Many law enforcement agencies have access to chaplaincy programs with personnel who are trained and equipped to assist an officer experiencing behavioral or mental health issues in seeking counseling or treatment. Senate Bill 111, which some of you were involved in the crafting of, as was I many years ago, it already requires scheduling an officer involved in a deadly force incident for a counseling session with a licensed mental health counselor within the 6 months following a deadly force incident, with a session to follow at a later time. As far as training is concerned, officers already receive training in emotional survival and wellness at the DPSST Basic Police Academy. Continuous training is regularly offered statewide and nationally on emotional survival and wellness, which we regularly send our personnel to. As far as funding costs and legal implications, this bill, if passed and signed into law, creates a financial impact for every police agency in Oregon at a time when budgets are tight and resources are scarce. Without state funding, this bill creates an unfunded mandate on the rest of us. There are roughly 5,500 certified police officers in Oregon. This does not include several thousand corrections officers who also carry firearms, have authority to use deadly force, legal authority to affect someone's liberty and daily contact with criminal justice offenders. If each of these 5,500 law enforcement officers were to meet with a mental health professional at least once every 2 years, as the bill requires, for a one-hour appointment at a conservative rate of, let's say, $300 per hour, the result is a biennial unfunded expenditure into the millions of dollars that I emphasize is currently unbudgeted. This is just for the initial meeting. What's not calculated are costs associated with the officer's time, either for the officer to attend or for backfilling the officer's absence, likely on overtime. This is just for one meeting. It's possible the officer could seek and be provided more frequent counseling with an associated annual cost into the tens and thousands of dollars per officer. This bill likely violates existing collective bargaining agreements currently in effect in Oregon. There's an unfunded cost consequence as well, and a legal consequence attached to this issue. This bill creates ethical conflicts and compliance issues for psychologists regarding the ethical principles for psychologists and their code of conduct. This bill likely violates the Americans with Disabilities Act under federal law because there must be a reasonable and objective factual basis to believe the employee is unable to perform the essential job functions and presents a risk to self or public to mandate such visits. Again, Oregon law enforcement agencies and our communities will be presented with cost consequences and legal consequences for the employer and the public. The bill talks about mental health professional. Is there a definition in Oregon revised statutes that constitutes such a person? Shouldn't this professional have some expertise in police and/or public safety psychology? That may be hard to find in rural parts of Oregon, so again, there's a cost consequence. I'll close with remarks similar to my opening remarks. Senate Bill 1531 is problematic, although well-intentioned. It is a perceived solution to something we are already dealing with. We in Oregon law enforcement leadership care deeply about the welfare of our officers. We are constantly working to improve working conditions, processes, and programs addressing officer welfare. The better environment we provide for our officers, the better service we provide to Oregon's communities. Senate Bill 1531 is not the answer. Thank you for allowing me to speak with you today.
All right, thank you. And Under Sheriff Clausen, we'd like to have your comments, but as we know, it's already been posted what has been read in the record. I prefer not having stuff read in the record that's already part of the record. So if you could just give us a summary of your, if there's any other points you'd like to highlight, that'd be great.
Sure. Chair Przanski, Vice Chair Thatcher, and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today on a very important topic. My name is Troy Clausen. I'm here to discuss opposition to Senate Bill 1531. I am the Undersheriff for the Marion County Sheriff's Office, and I am before you today representing the Oregon State Sheriff's Association and to share my personal and professional perspective on Senate Bill 1531. I've been serving in this profession since 1990. I've had the fortunate opportunity to work both as a police officer and deputy sheriff. Over my career, I've seen many traumatic and tragic incidents involving my fellow brothers and sisters, as well as to individuals and families within our communities. I've had two deadly force encounters, lost a deputy sheriff in the line of duty, a personal friend and coworker to suicide, and responded to numerous calls that no one should have to witness. With that said, I sit here before you today healthy and thankful and honored for the opportunity to serve in this profession. Specifically to Senate Bill 1531, I don't think it's necessary currently in Oregon's public safety system. Oregon's law enforcement leaders have done a remarkable job over the past 10 years becoming more familiar with the physical and mental and emotional demands that our profession places on our personnel. And I know both the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police and the Oregon State Sheriff's Association are keenly aware of the dangers of this job and are working diligently to address emotional and physical well-being with our personnel. I would like to point out that the Sheriff's Association has incorporated officer wellness and peer support training for our law enforcement executives and frontline supervisors, both at the OSSA Command College and the new Sheriff's Academy. Any police agency in Oregon that has been accredited by the Oregon Accreditation Alliance, Lexapol, or CALEA will have a policy on fitness for duty that directs personnel and leadership on how to deal with personnel who are in a mental health crisis that could potentially impact their ability to perform their essential job duties. Furthermore, in this state, through the work and training of groups and individuals like Code 4, Dr. Kevin Gilmartin, Dr. David Corey, Dr. Suzanne Best, and Dr. Sherry Harden, our law enforcement personnel are being directed by agencies to seek out professional help when they, coworkers, or supervisors recognize that our people may be struggling with a personal or professional issue. Furthermore, the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training introduces officer wellness in the Basic Academy, and supervisors and middle managers are instructed on stress first aid in their respective management training courses. The topic is of such importance to our profession that both regional and international training conferences have many presentations on both emotional and physical wellness and agency peer support teams. I'll reiterate that while I think the intent of this bill is good, the mandated requirements make it troubling for the following reasons, and those have kind of been talked about today already, so I won't go into those. Public safety officers respond to characteristics like trust and transparency. Continued development of this movement in law enforcement by our local agencies and help with our ongoing process of developing a culture of acceptance and understanding of why both mental and physical well-being are just as important to us as our other officer survival skills, those things that we do, defensive tactics, driving, those things, these have to be on the same level that those do. It's important for us to know that. Something as personal as sharing your innermost thoughts won't come from mandating police officers to visit a mental health professional. It will happen because they value and trust that their agencies are providing the necessary information and training to them in a variety of ways that help make them feel comfortable enough to ask for help, to accept help when approached by a supervisor, a coworker, or a peer support member, or understand why an agency may ask them to go and seek professional help if they're in a situation where they are stressed or experiencing a mental health crisis due to trauma, both professionally and personally. The type of trust required here for their emotional and physical well-being may not be accomplished by simply mandating that they go and do a visit. Thank you for your time this morning.
Sorry for the rush, but thank you very much. So this is what's going to happen on this bill. We're going to carry this over and or repost it for this coming Thursday. The committee for everyone will be working on a standard schedule of 8:15. This morning we thought we would start a little bit later just to get everyone on board and et cetera. So I apologize for the overtake on time. So 15:31 will be reset for this coming Thursday at 8:15, and we'll start off. I have three individuals that are signed up. Michael, Scott, and Patrick are the three I have. Is there anyone else that's in the room today that wants to be on the list to come back to give testimony on Thursday that were not already signed up on the list? With that, we're going to go ahead and close the public hearing at this time for Senate Bill 1531. We will carry it over, as I said, for this coming Thursday. And for everyone else, again, I apologize for a little extra time here, but thank you very much, and we'll see everyone tomorrow morning at 8:15.